Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. All right, I checked it yesterday. I haven't checked this morning, although I know they're in session. I haven't checked what's on the agenda. It's talking about the Montana legislature, 69th Montana legislature. We've been doing a regular series here that we call Capital Recap, but it's kind of fun. The Dems like Dem Power Hour. And then, of course, for the GOP would be the More Power Hour. All right, funny. But it's been really good. They come on, they answer the questions as straight as possible. We get a chance to know who they are, what they believe in a lot of ways. We don't have that today because they are busy, and I'll tell you about how busy they are in just a little bit, but I'm going to give you a taste of what goes on at the state capitol and just kind of peel in on some of these debates. I think they're very fascinating. They certainly tell an awful lot more about your legislators there in Helena, Montana. So that today on Voices, oh, Montana. Especially for today, I got a note earlier in the week about how busy our legislators were going to be. Normally this week would be the GOP turn and leadership to come on. But they're just slammed in both houses here. Let's see, I don't maybe have it in front of me here, but I did this report yesterday for, and we've been doing a legislative report here. For a lot of our stations, a lot of our affiliates are picking up this Montana legislative report that we do on a daily basis. If your station's not carrying it, give them a call. There's still time. There's probably less than 20 days left in this session, but it's hopefully very informative for you. And I know it has been for me, and the learning sessions just keep on continuing here. But so I reported yesterday on that about they had about almost 200. They touched close to 200 bills in the body yesterday on the floor. That doesn't include committee meetings. I looked at the agenda this morning. There were 7 a.m. committee meetings. So they've got a lot of bills. They're removing how many? What was it? About 1,600. I've got a number here from, and this was late in March. They had 1,500 bills, resolutions, or other measures that had been introduced. And then, you know, you look at perspective, we were talking about 2023. I think that was the most bills that the legislature had addressed in like 20 years. So the 68th Montana legislature, there was almost 1,700. 1,698, and then 885 enacted into law. You go back to 2021, the 67th session, 1,312 bills, resolutions addressed, 725 across that governor's finish line. So there's still a lot of work to do. Yesterday, as I mentioned, they touched a couple hundred, actually, a lot of them on second reading, and that's where all the debate happens. So you look at the Senate, they placed 100 bills on the agenda for debate yesterday, second reading, and then they had 30 bills on third reading. That usually means no debate. That's just that last chance to change your vote or maybe even kill a bill. Second reading, debate, third reading, usually a formality, but not always. There's a number of bills that do get killed in third reading. As simple up or down votes there. The House was equally slammed, you know, and I'll get Cody to pull it up over there. Go to ledgemt.gov, Cody, and pull up today's agenda. I want to see what's on there. Equally slammed. They had 60 bills up for debate on second reading and 7 on third reading. You know, in debates, they have cloture in the House where you can vote on ending debate. In the Senate, they don't have a cloture rule. You can just debate on, and you know, and generally they do. You can call for cloture. It's not an automatic thing. If you feel like the debate has, you know, starting to get redundant and it's time to move on anyway, usually it's the majority leader that will call for cloture. Others will. And then the whole body will vote on it. Cloture passes. I think, is that a 51 or a 55 votes needed? Don't remember at the moment. Certain rules apply. But then if not, then, you, okay, let's keep talking this one over. So, not a, you know, and a lot of times they're non controversial bills. A lot of them aren't very controversial. I kind of picked one out of the blue yesterday, HB 450. Senators at Eric Albus out of Glasgow, or representative, I should say. I think he's the first term representative. This is a bill that's entitled to generally revise bird dog training licensing laws, right? And who knew? That's one of my takeaways. I did not know that you needed a license to train a bird dog. And the bill actually clarifies a little bit better when you do and when you don't. And I think that kind of has to come down to whether you're training the dog with non-captive birds versus captive birds from a bird game farm. So anyway, breezed through the House 94-3 last Thursday, squeaked by the Senate yesterday 48-2. So that's just an indication of how some of these bills are debated, passed. That's how you can get through 1,500 bills. Is that, well, you got a lot of work, you got a lot of reading to do, and there's a lot of things that happen in committee, a lot of understanding questions. I mean, it's just a great place for that kind of communication and ideas. And I'm gonna share some of that here too in just a little bit. A debate on the House floor that got real emotional. It had to do with assisted suicide. In fact, where are we at on the clock? I might take. Go ahead, Cody. Keep looking. Let me give a little more on this. This is Senate Bill 136. Okay, it started in the Senate. And it passed the Senate. What was it here? 136 vote count. This is the House vote count. It did not pass the House. That's the thing here. I think this was probably considered a partisan kind of bill here as well. There it is. It got past the Senate in early February, 29-20. So Senate Bill 136, it was introduced by Senator Carl Glimm. He's up in the Flathead area, very much conservative. And this was a bill to try and rein in some laws regarding assisted suicide, physician-assisted suicide in Montana. This bill attempted to rein that in by prohibiting that in Montana, specifically through specifying that a patient consent cannot be used as a defense against homicide charges for physicians who prescribe lethal medication to terminally ill patients in Montana. That is indeed the case. If you that falls under murder charges. In fact, one of the representatives, Caleb Hinkle, will mention that rather quickly as we get to this debate on the House floor. And so proponents of the measure argued that it protects those vulnerable individuals and upholds the ethical standards of the medical profession. And opponents are going to say it infringes on patient autonomy, criminalizes compassionate end-of-life care. How would you vote? Do you have, and I think a lot of people do, unfortunately, sadly so, we have a connection to suicide that is probably not 4 or 5 degrees of separation. It may be 1 degree of separation, if there is any separation at all. And whatever that means, it could be a close family member. It could be a husband or a wife or a son or a daughter. I think we all have some experience with that. And I think we understand the emotions that must go with this, these end-of-life decisions. Suicide as a surprise or as a response is one thing, and it's a sad thing. And in Montana, it's a gut punch because we're one of the leaders in the nation on veteran suicide and on teenage suicide. Let's wipe that one off of our slates, and it takes a concerted effort. So there's a lot of people who, when they're this will be a House debate on this bill. I'm probably going to take an early break here, Cody, so we can set this up and get rolling with it. It's going to be, I think, about 14 minutes of debate here. You're going to hear from close to maybe 8 or 9 representatives on this debate. And it happened earlier in the week, just this week, too. And I'll talk more about it. But that's Senate Bill 136. And it failed the House. So it passes the Senate 29-20. That's almost a bipartisan or a partisan vote. I think the split 32-18 in the Senate, and is it 58-42 in the House? So this bill failed 42-57 in the House, and this was on Wednesday as well. But interesting debate, and emotions that your representatives bring to the floor and bring to the people of Montana. They all know now, because it's been going on for quite some time. The Legislative Services Division has been streaming these sessions, the committee hearings. And it is really a great service that you pay for as a taxpayer. And the Legislative Services Division takes very, very seriously. They've got a new website this year, and I had to find my way around it a little bit. They take it very, very seriously, and I very much appreciate that. I might do this first. It might be better afterwards, but we're taking a call now. We kind of have open phones today, but I'm going back through some of the legislation that's been debated on and passed and whatnot, just more of a capital recap internally here. But I want to take this call from John, listening in Montana City. And John, thank you for calling in today. This is about suicide prevention. Did you watch this debate by any chance?
No, not really. I didn't know. I missed it. But I've got a lot of personal experience with it. My father-in-law committed suicide. My dad committed suicide. Two of my cousins committed suicide. And two of my friends that came back from Vietnam committed suicide.
John, what? I don't know how to respond to that outside of I'm sorry.
I know.
For all of that.
It's mind-boggling. Now, my one friend and my one cousin committed suicide because they were falsely accused of a crime they didn't do, and they both of them by their wives because they wanted divorces, and they didn't want a divorce, so they figured, I guess some lawyer told them that if he abused the kids or he did anything sexually with the kids or whatever, that they would give her a divorce immediately, and that's exactly what they did. And then both my one friend and my cousin committed suicide, and at the funeral they confessed that they didn't do it. They didn't commit the crime, but they just couldn't live with themselves because they were accused of it. They were, you know, automatically guilty because their wife said so, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they gotta clear these cases a lot better than they do, because some of them use that approach to get what they want. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Like and now my dad, it was a situation where my mom cheated on him, and they had been together for 35 years, and he just couldn't understand it, and he didn't want to live without her, so that's what he did.
Yeah.
And it was so unnecessary, because he just didn't get the help he needed, you know. And now with my father-in-law, he lost his spouse, my mother-in-law, and he came up here to Montana to live with us, and he was getting physically, so he couldn't do what he used to do. And he said, John, I'm all done. I'm all done. I don't want, you know, he was a real physical person his whole life. He was in World War II and went through hell in the South Pacific. And then he joined the Coast Guard, and then he got out and worked 38 years for Chrysler. And he just said he thought he was a burden. And so he just quit eating and quit drinking and laid down, and we couldn't force him to do anything. And I called hospice. They came out, and he was in his 90s, obviously. He didn't have that long, but he just decided it was time to go. So, I mean, it was self-inflicted, but there's so many times that people in their mind think that you know, their family don't care, or their friends or their wives or their exes or whatever. But false accusations causes a lot of it, and, of course, dope.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's if you're not in your right mind.
For the life of me, yep. I cannot imagine Montana legalizing marijuana. I just cannot do it. I can't. I over my career, I'm retired too. I'm 82. And when I had business, my own business, and worked for others, it was so bad that when I worked in Alaska, there were so many people smoking pot on the job that we had to start giving them blood tests, and we couldn't let them operate equipment. We couldn't let them do anything because they were too dangerous.
Wow.
And I can't imagine, you know, in the marijuana today is what, 10 times stronger than it was back in the 70s?
Yeah. We may
How
not.
How can they do that?
We may not know what we're doing, John. We may not know what we're doing sometimes. Yeah.
No, and I know at least two other people. My granddaughter's a teacher here in Helena, and her boss's husband had that problem, and he did dope and whatnot, and then he got so out of hand that they had to medicate him real strong, and he obviously, when you do that, they say, oh, no, it's not working. I need more. I need more. But these psychologists, they think they can cure everything with a drug.
Yeah.
And so what did they do? They doubled his medication. He went home and he was so depressed that it was supposed to take him down from where he was at. And it did. He went home, walked into the kitchen and in front of his wife and kids and shot himself.
That's hard to hear, John. I mean, and you've gone through that, and you've processed all those emotions, and thank you for sharing that. That's a huge piece of personal information.
Well, I thought the public should know. A lot of times they keep it quiet.
Yeah.
And they don't, and of course the family, a lot of them don't want people to know that that's what happened.
Yes.
They feel responsible.
Yes.
But, in most cases, the family, don't realize how serious it is.
Yeah.
They really don't.
Well, we're waking
up. The psych doctors, they distribute medication way, way too often and too much.
Yeah, and the medication is not proven either. I mean, it's...
No.
Yeah, the science on it is way, way off. It helps some, but I think it hurts as much as it does help, if not more. Let me ask you this question, John.
Sure.
Then, because you've got a unique perspective on this, I think you've seen... you've seen close members use suicide as an escape. You've also seen them use suicide as end of life care, compassionate sort of end of life care. So these legislators were dealt with a question about, do we allow for physician assisted suicide to terminally ill patients? Or does that take us down the wrong road? Do we need to uphold the medical standards and protect those people who may not be thinking very clearly? Does this go down the slippery slope? How would you vote on this one, John?
Well, I would have to look at the total bill, but I think that in some cases there should be a medical board, to look at the circumstances, look at the medical records, and they should unanimously agree that this person is suffering and is not, there's no future for him, and it's up to the patient, obviously, but then are they in their right mind? That's the thing is some people, they have a bad day in especially if they're on dope, they have a bad day and they're just, well, I'm all done. I'm going to end it right now. They don't realize that there's help out there. Now, those kind of people, I don't agree. I don't agree they should, somebody comes in and says, well, I'm really sick. But no, they got to know how sick they are before they allow it. And if somebody's terminal and they've I lost at least 3 or 4 friends that had cancer and it got in their brain. And I mean, they were bad. And we had that conversation during the Vietnam War that, we told each other that if I'm that bad and I'm laying there and I don't want to get graphic, but I'm all blown apart and part of my head's missing or whatever, I want you to put me out of my misery. Wow. And we had that conversation.
John, thanks for your service there. You've gone through an awful lot in life. You should call more often.
Well,
I love those perspectives, but again, I'm sorry for, the tragedy that is close to you and has befallen you and your family members as well. But I'm happy for your life, right?
That's what I my grandpa always told me, and both of my grandpas lived to be over 100. And both of them, I was real close to, and they always told me, Johnny, you don't have nothing. You cannot change yesterday. No matter what happens, you can't change yesterday. And they escaped Hitler. And they escaped. Their families were shot by the SS in Austria, and they escaped and come to America. And they said, only thing I promised was I was going to try to make the best of my life and do the most I could for other people. And that's the only thing you can do. You can't change yesterday. And I've always carried that with me, that when something happens like that, and I was a professional pallbearer for years, It seemed like it anyway.
Yeah.
I always thought, I really feel sorry for the family and I feel sorry that he's not here, but I got to make the best of my life and I got to, I got to look out for people. And that's the way I've always been.
Bless you, John. God bless you. Thank you again for your service, for sharing this and then for, inspiring, I think, to have some fortitude. Because people, especially nowadays, I think we're easily depressed, or we have we have less resistance against oppression in some ways, and we've got to utilize these tools. We've got to recognize the hope and the help out there too. Good stuff, John.
That's right. We got to educate people and educate. You know, a lot of people protect kids at that level. You know, from middle school down. But I mean, I'm not saying that they should try to learn about this kind of stuff. But from middle school up, they should be taught more about life and what really life is. You know,
right?
And how they can lose it.
Especially under the parents' direction, too. I think all that stuff needs to be guided by the family. Sure. John, I look forward to chatting with you again, okay?
Okay.
Hope it's a beautiful day in Montana City.
It is.
Let's go to Hamilton. It's probably a beautiful day there as well. Citizen Skip listening alongside. I'll get to this this debate on the floor. Like I said, I think it's worth playing here and worth listening to. We talk about patient-assisted suicide, but the end-of-life care. Skip, how are you doing? Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you, Tom, and nice to talk to you again. I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks, I think, but I was just very inspired by that gentleman from Montana City. When I worked in Helena, I always took drives down to Montana City. And then I got on that road on the, I think would be the east side of town, after I'd stop and have dinner at that steakhouse there.
Yeah.
And then I take that drive that goes down past Strawberry Hill and then finally comes out down in the little town of Clancy. Maybe you've been on that road.
Sure.
And it's Montana City, at least 20 years ago when I used to do that, when I was working in that area, was just a great little town. And that man is very inspiring.
Yeah.
And I think that he seems like the youngest old guy in Montana City.
Right.
Yeah. I think he should inspire groups with the way that he delivers and inspires.
You got a minute. I'm sorry, but heartbreak. So
I just wanted to tell you that I heard you mention the Legislative Services Division that's in Helena, and most people don't even realize they exist, and they do in fact provide a great service to the legislators, as far as I can tell, helping them make sure they cross the T's and dot the I's, and get everything in order when they want a bill put together. And I just think it's something that a lot of legislators would fall short of getting the job done correctly in order to make a presentation. I think that's really what they're best at. And then there's something else that happens in Helena that most people don't know. There's actually a guy there who I've never met, but he's in charge of getting the pages in order so they can do their job correctly and be in the right place at the right time for the right reason to make sure that all the messages go back and forth correctly and things go as smoothly as possible. So I should let you go and have a nice weekend. And thanks for having that kind of deliveries on your show.
Oh, thank you, Skip. Thanks for that shout out to the staffers. I mean, the legislators do the same thing quite frequently because they do rely on them. It's team effort from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Going to have to move along quickly here. I want to get a lot of this debate, which happened earlier this week on this Senate Bill 136 that we had been referencing. But it certainly sparks some emotion. So I'm going to take a few phone calls on this, and we'll go quickly to Frank, listening in Evergreen. Frank, would you vote for or would you vote against physician-assisted suicide?
Me, I'm against it. A lot of it. Primarily is because I was raised a Catholic, and it's a mortal sin to want to kill yourself.
Right.
It's just, and I don't want to go to hell. But in some cases, you know, it's just, there's a lot of money for hospitals set up these hospices in places like Columbia Falls, where there's lots of pollution from environmental disasters that the EPA can't even begin to touch. And so they just want to put these people in hospices and surgically remove their wallets, and no money will go to their estate. I mean, their estate will go to, will no longer go to their family living somewhere else. They just want to surgically remove it. And that's what I see in the future of Montana. It's the last place to die. thanks to the hospital system.
Well, Frank, I appreciate the comment, and I would get into it more, but I'm going to move on because I want to play some of this debate too, and I think there's things in there that are emotional, that are very human as well. So thanks, Frank, for listening and calling in. Take a quick call, Nancy, listening in Roundup with a comment here too on this conversation about suicide and physician assisted suicide. Good morning, Nancy.
Thank you so much, Tom. I would have to vote against it because I'm the type of person who believes in never giving up. I can't give up on another human being that's laying there in pain, even though I don't know. I just couldn't do it. And I think it's a very, very private decision between the family members and perhaps their father or their grandfather or some family member there. They have to make this decision, not us. But I just want to salute and say thank you to John and God bless him. I'm a member of the Woodstock generation, too, and I lived through those very, very turbulent, violent times of the Vietnam era. So, John, God bless you, and I love you for fighting for the United States of America. But, no, I couldn't do it, Tom.
Yeah. Nancy, thanks for that. I guess I'm mixed about it because I'm not sure that I could watch a person I'd love watch them suffer so hard. Watch if they are begging, if they're saying, please, please, please. And if all the cards had lined up and it was sort of, justifiable in their mind, I would have a rough time saying no to that. But also, I'm with you, too. You go down this slope. And in fact, Jedediah Hinkle, representative, will speak on that here, too. And I talked about it a while ago. Canada, they allow physician-assisted suicide. And since then, the MAID Act, if I can get to that in time, he'll talk about how now they are even allowing it for depression. They're even allowing it if you're homeless and you want to end your life. And that's the slippery slope that this could go down. So it's a tough call. I think it really is. But I think with you, I would probably end up lining up with you in the end on it, is that you don't give up hope. You keep believing until the very end. It's such an individual. Hopefully the suffering passes. And there's a reward for that. I don't know how else to put it, but it's difficult. Thank you, Nancy, for sharing that. Anything else real quick?
No, I just want to say that Canada also, people with eating disorders, they want to give them suicide assistance. Yeah. I mean, my God, what has happened to the moral compass of Canada? And I agree, this has to do with our moral compass. We were a country based on Judeo-Christianity. It's not easy for us. It's not easy to just say, well, kill this person or help this person die. No, 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 I can't do it. I just can't.
Yeah, I can see circumstances where I could. But as a law, I don't think we need to go there. Anyway, thank you, Nancy. I appreciate that very much.
Yep. And you're welcome.
I'm gonna go right to this, okay? This was on Wednesday, House Bill 136, as I talked about. It doesn't specifically prohibit it, but it does prohibit physician-assisted suicide in Montana as a defense, patient consent for physician-assisted suicide as a defense against homicide charges. So it's not an all-encompassing bill regarding it, but it aims to protect the vulnerable and also kind of uphold the ethical standards. So and this is from the start of it here as well. Maybe I'm explaining too much. There was a Senate bill that just passed. This was on Wednesday again. Senate Bill 369, which was to strengthen suicide prevention efforts in schools. And that was a 98-1 vote. And they followed that up with Senate Bill 136. And so right now chairing the House during this is a Representative Braxton Mitchell. He's out of Columbia Falls. So you'll hear him first, and then you'll hear the clerk. And then Amy Regeer is bringing this bill as a carrier for the sponsor in the Senate. So this debate in the House earlier this week.
Members of the committee, before you for your consideration, Senate Bill 136. The clerk read the title of the bill.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 136, introduced by Glim, a bill for an act entitled, An Act Providing That Consent to Physician Aid in Dying is Not a Defense to a Charge of Homicide, Providing a Definition, Amending Sections, and Providing an Effective Date. Mr. Chair.
What is your pleasure, Representative Regeer?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee does rise and report after having had under consideration Senate Bill 136, it recommend the same be concurred in.
Representative Regeer.
Mr. Chair, members of the body, one of the key functions of this body is to ensure clarity in the law. Senate Bill 136 is about doing exactly that. Right now, Montana law exists in a gray area. In Baxter versus Montana, 2009, the Montana Supreme Court left open the possibility that physician-assisted suicide might be allowed if a patient consents. But there has been no statutory protection for this practice. In fact, the court in their decision clearly said, if the legislature so chooses, it may modify the statutes to reflect a different policy choice. But as it stands now, under existing law, the ball is in the legislature's court. In other words, the court deferred to us, to this body, to make a definitive statement. That's exactly what Senate Bill 136 does. This bill clarifies that consent cannot be used as a defense to homicide in cases of physician-assisted suicide, closing a dangerous loophole and restoring consistency to the criminal code. It ensures that doctors are not left guessing about their legal exposure and that patients are not exposed to unnecessary risk under the guise of compassion. Clear law makes for good governance. Let's remove the ambiguity, fulfill our duty, and take back the ball the court passed on to us. I urge a yes vote on Senate Bill 136.
Is there discussion? Representative Overstreet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a personal experience that bears directly.
I should say that was Amy Regeer again. She's out of the Kalispell area as well, representative. Her father was a senator in the last session, Keith Regeer, and her brother, Matt Regeer, is the Senate president at this time as well, carrying that bill for Carl Glimm. Now, this is Greg Overstreet, and he's a new representative as well. Met him earlier this year. Really like this guy, and I've been watching him on the floor as well. Listen to this story, by the way. And he's out of Western Montana, Superior, Bitterroot area. Wait. I'll just look it up. I got to get it right here. I think it's Hamilton as well. L-M-N-O, I know I'm sucking up valuable time. Greg's out of Stevensville. Thank you.
Clay, on the topic of this bill, I almost inadvertently killed myself with a decision like the one in this bill. My experience bears on an under-considered aspect of assisted suicide, and that is a patient's competency to decide whether to die. I was on a ventilator for COVID with an 80% death rate. I was also on about 7 gallons of Dilaudid, which is a synthetic morphine. Okay, it wasn't 7 gallons, but I was completely whacked out of my mind. That's an important fact in this story. I also had extreme sleep deprivation because when you can't breathe, you can't sleep. So when I was completely out of my mind, I hatched up the brilliant idea that I would click my fingers in Morse code to the doctor to let the doctor know that I didn't want to die. You know, there were only two problems with this. The doctor didn't know Morse code, and neither did I. I think that's a great illustration of some of the absolutely silly things we do when we're on heavy doses of drugs and we're sleep deprived. So going back a few days, that was after I came off of the ventilator when I came up with the brilliant Morse code plan. Before I went on the COVID ventilator, I had to make a decision about a do not resuscitate order. My doctors told me that I would likely be in an assisted living center the rest of my life if I came off the ventilator. Turns out that wasn't true. I did not appreciate their exaggeration, by the way. I didn't want to be a burden, so I picked 7 days. I wrote a note on my phone because it was hard to talk, and I laid out my reasons for wanting to be unplugged after 7 days. It's complete gibberish. I say again, I was absolutely incompetent to make this decision. The doctors were fine with 7 days. My wife pleaded with me to make it 14 days. It turns out that was brilliant because I went with 14 days. I got off the ventilator after 8 days. If I would have left this to my own devices and to the informal agreement that my doctors had, I would have killed myself. This, and I'll be candid, this bill is a close one for me. I think there are very valid arguments on both sides. But the tiebreaker, in my opinion, goes to the fact that many patients, such as me, lack the competency to make this decision. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Darling.
Julie Darling from Helena, Montana, House District 84.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the
body.
She's
a Republican.
As you all, or a lot of you know, I have a very, very personal connection with this. In February, I was co-sponsor and carried the bill, House Bill 637, the medical aid in dying, presented in judiciary. I could tell you about the story of my sister. My sister, she checked into this. I called her the careers director because she had to be in charge, control of everything. She had a 3.5-year battle with breast cancer. At the end, when we were talking to the doctor that she had chosen, because this is what she wanted to do. She did not want to suffer. She did not want her family to watch her suffer and continue and decline downhill. The doctor, she was not under drugs. She was not under massive amounts of painkillers or anything like that. The doctor made sure of that. The doctor questioned her. He questioned every family member that was in the room. It's all on video. It's all documented. She made a very conscious choice that was not clouded by anything other than her will to do what she wanted to do. In the end, we all know the ultimate cruise director was God, and God chose for her. But on this, terminally ill patients who are considering this and wanting to choose this option, they're terminally ill. They're going to die. I could tell you stories of two businessmen that I know, one here in Helena and one in the Flathead. They shot themselves. Their spouses came home to see them all over. These people who are choosing this, they have a good relationship with their doctor. They don't suffer from mental illness. They're not in the middle of teen angst, and they don't have PTSD. They have a terminal illness. This bill makes me pretty sad. This is the government inserting itself in our lives, inserting itself into the patient's right to choose. Please vote no to protect doctors, to protect terminally ill patients, and protect our choice to death with dignity. Thank you.
Julie Darling, once again, that's all we're going to have time for, but there was a lot more similar to that. Representative Cunningham shared a story. I talked about Jed Hinkle's testimony on this bill as well, and about Canada and that slippery slope down there as well. This bill eventually, as I said, ended up, it passed the Senate in early February, but it failed in the House, 42-57. It's a tough one, you know. Not everything is bird dog licensing, right? Again, that's why I appreciate that public service. Bought into it.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.